The Haunted Man and the Ghost's Bargain by Charles Dickens, dramatised by Jill Brook, with John Moffat as Dickens and Michael Tudor Barnes as Redlaw.
It is now some time since the publication of this, my last Christmas book, but I think it will repay one more telling. Everybody said Mr. Redlaw looked like a haunted man. Who could have seen his hollow cheek and sunken eye, his black-cloaked figure, his grizzled hair hanging seaweed-like about his face, but might have said he looked like a haunted man? His solitary vault-like dwelling was in a remote part of the ancient college where he lectured in chemistry. You should have seen him in his chamber about twilight, in the dead winter time, when he sat gazing at the shadows in the fire. You should have seen him then.
Who's that? Come in.
Greetings, would you, sir. Come to light your lamp and set the table. I'm humbly fearful, Mr. Redlaw, that your stuff is a good bit past the time to light, sir. But my wife has been taken off her legs so often by the wind that it's a mercy she got home at all.
Yes.
That's what I always say myself, sir. Such as many of us, Swidgers. Pepper. Why, there's my father, Philip Swidger, superannuated caretaker of this institution. 87 years old, he's a Swidger. Spoon.
True, William.
And then you come to his successor as caretaker, my unworthy self, Salt. Then you come to all my brothers and their families, knife and fork. Why, what with cousins, uncles and aunts, the Switchers, tumblers, might take hold of hands and make a ring round England. So it's all for the best, Mrs. William and I have no child of our own. And butter. Mrs. William said she'd dish in 10 minutes.
I am quite ready.
Mrs. William's been at it again, sir. Not satisfied with being a sort of mother to all the young gentlemen that come to attend your lectures, she's been and went and...
Good evening, sir.
Yes, yes, sir, and my father.
Good evening.
What is that the old man has in his arms?
Oh, holly, sir, to decorate your room.
When I first came here, it was a pleasure to know that one of our benefactors left money in his will to buy holly for garnishing the walls and windows come Christmas. Hey. You recollect his picture that hangs in our great dinner hall? Sedate gentleman with a peaked beard, a ruff round his neck and a scroll below him, in old English letters. Lord, keep my memory green. Freshening up the bare rooms with these branches and berries keeps my memory green, sir.
Oh, come away, my dear. Hmm? Mr. Redlaw won't settle to his dinner otherwise. Mm-hmm. I wish you good night, sir, and hope...
Oh, stay. William. Yeah. What were you going to tell me concerning your excellent wife?
Why, sir, Mrs. Williams got her eye on me.
You're not afraid of Mrs. Williams' eye, are you?
Why, no, sir, but I wouldn't like to... Millie, him, you know, down in the buildings, my love.
I asked William not to mention it. It's a poor, hard-working young gentleman, sir, one of your students who is too ill to go home this holiday time and lives down in Jerusalem buildings. That's all, sir. Oh,
why have I not heard about him? Give me my hat and coat. What house? What number? If he's one of my students, I must help him.
Oh, you mustn't go there, sir. It couldn't be thought of.
Why not?
Well, sir, the young gentleman would never have made his situation known to one of his own sex. They all confide in Mrs. William. They all... trust
me. There is good sense in what you say, William. Take him this, Millie.
Oh, dear, no, sir. Not money. Couldn't be dreamed of. He said that of all the world he would not receive help from you, though he is a student in your class. I can't tell why, sir, for I know he is lonely and lacking comforts, but he is engaged to be married when he can afford it. How very dark it seems in here.
It's turned colder, too. William, my boy, turn up the lamp and rouse the fire.
Yes, Father.
He was muttering in his sleep yesterday afternoon about some great wrong that could never be forgiven.
Not content with being like a mother to him, sir, When she was coming home tonight, Mrs. William goes and finds a creature more like a wild beast than a child, shivering upon a doorstep. What does she do but bring it home to dry it and feed it? It's sitting in the old lodge chimney corner, staring at our fire as if its eyes would never shut again.
God bless you, Millie. I will consider what I can do to help, but I'll not detain you any longer now. Good night.
I thank you, sir. William, you take the lantern, lead the way. I'm forever stamping down these long, dark passages. Good night, sir.
Good night, Mr. Redlaw.
Good night, sir.
As Redlaw sat musing in his chair alone, he did not notice the healthy holly that withered on the wall and dropped dead branches. The gloom and shadow thickened, and slowly formed an awful likeness of himself. The living man and the animated image of himself dead looked upon the other. This was the dread companion of the haunted man.
Spirit of myself, why do you come to haunt me like this?
I come when you call me. I am the one, miserably poor and neglected in his youth, who studied and strove and suffered that he might gain knowledge.
Remember, I too am that man.
A stranger took my father's place when I was a child, and my parents cast their offspring loose early, as birds do. In this struggle upward, I found a friend, Longford. Though he had money and I none, we worked together side by side, and I bestowed all my affection and trust on him.
Not all. I also had a sister.
Did Longford love my sister? She loved him? I think he did once.
Let me forget it.
At that time, a pretty young girl entered my life too, and a dream of love arose in my own heart as well as in my sister's, though I was still too poor to think of marriage. But as I strove to climb the ladder of success, what visions of the future did I see?
I saw them again in the fire.
Pictures that were delusions. For my rich friend came between me and my dear love and won her for himself. My sister's frail universe was shattered by Longford's betrayal. She lived to see my ambition rewarded, but then
died. Gentle as ever, and concerned only for me, her brother, and my loss. Early unhappiness, a wound from someone I trusted, and a loss that nothing can replace, live longer in the mind than dreams.
Thus memory is a curse. And if I could forget my sorrow and my wrong, I would. If I could forget, I would.
My life is darkened by that incessant whisper.
Then hear what I offer. Forget the sorrow, wrong, and trouble you have known. I have the power to cancel their remembrance, to leave only faint traces that will soon die out.
If I agree to this, what else shall I lose?
No results of study. Only the feelings and associations nourished by your banished recollections. Decide before the opportunity is lost.
One moment. I call heaven to witness that I have never hated anyone. If I have made too much of all that might have been and too little of what is, the evil has fallen on me and not on others. Yes, I will close the bargain. I will forget my sorrow, wrong, and trouble.
Then it is done. But remember, the gift that I have given, you shall give again. Go where you will. You shall destroy the power of memory in all whom you approach. Destroy the power of memory.
With a terrible smile upon its face, the phantom melted before him and was gone. As his memories slowly began to fade, Redlaw was still conscious of the science that he taught. In the material world, no atom can be spared without a blank being made in the great universe. Were not good and evil, happiness and sorrow, all necessary in the memories of men? Once deprived of kindly recollection, how would the balance of people's lives be changed? Would their hearts not harden, and their souls give way to irritation and despair? His thoughts were broken by a shrill cry far off in the wind.
Where are you?
Hello?
Where are you?
What is it? Come to the light.
As Redlaw raised the lamp and tried to pierce the gloom, something rushed past him into the room like a wildcat and crouched down in a corner. A bundle of tatters held together by a hand. A baby savage.
Oh, Bertie, you hit me!
Who are you? What do you want?
Where's the woman? I want to find the woman what brought me here and set me by the fire. She was gone so long, I went to look for her and lost myself. I don't want you. I want the woman.
Try to run, would you?
Let me go. I've done nothing to you.
What is your name?
Got none. Let me go. I want to go back to the woman.
Well, this way. I'll take you.
Remember, the gift that I have given, you shall give again. Go where you will.
No. I will not go to the lodge tonight. Go straight down this passage and into the yard. You see the fire shining on the window there? Now, be off with you and leave me alone.
Tetterby's The Newsagents was the corner shop in Jerusalem Buildings. There was a good show of literature in the window, chiefly consisting of out-of-date picture newspapers. Walking sticks and marbles were included in the stock in trade. It had once extended into the light confectionery line, but nothing connected with that branch of commerce remained except a glass jar containing a languishing mass of bullseyes which had melted and congealed until all hope of getting them out was gone. In another jar was a heap of minute wax dolls. Time was when it had put its trust in cheap jewellery, for in one pane of glass there was a card of signet rings and a black talisman of inscrutable purpose labelled ninepence. Mr. Adolphus Tetterby sat in a small parlour partitioned off from his small shop by a small screen pasted all over with small scraps of newspapers. In company with this small man were a number of marauding small boys, fighting and arguing, scuffling in and out of bed.
You bad boy!
Little Johnny Tetterby was tottering to and fro, considerably affected in his knees by the weight of a very large baby, his only sister Sally. It was a very Moloch of a baby, which usually roved from door to door in its brother's arms. He was content to stagger about with it like a very small porter with a very large parcel.
Oh, ain't you any feeling for your poor father after a hard winter's day that you must wither his rest with your witch's tricks? Isn't it enough, sir, that your big brother, young Dolphus, is toiling and moiling in the cold to sell his newspapers, and you rolling in a leper luxury with a baby and everything you can wish for? But must you make a wilderness of home and maniacs of your parents? Must you, Johnny? Hey! There. Don't take on so. Hey, your brother's late tonight, Johnny. He'll come home like a lump of ice. And what's keeping your precious mother?
Here's mother now. We go for Sue, Father.
Ah, yes, that's the footstep of my little woman. Oh, I must have to sit down. Hey, are you very wet, young Dolphus, my boy? Come and dry yourself by the fire.
No, Father, thank you. I ain't very wet. Does my face shine much, Father?
Johnny. Hang up your bonnet and shawl. Fetch me the tablecloth, will you?
Yes, Mother.
Oh, dear me. Dear me, that's the way the world goes.
Which is the way the world goes,
my dear? Oh, nothing. Oh, dear me. Dear me, dear me. Oh, that's the way the world goes.
My duck, you said that before. Which is the way the world goes?
Oh, nothing.
It's a fire. You said that before, too.
Well, I'll say it again if you like. Oh, nothing. There now.
My little woman, what's put you out?
Who said I was put out? I never did.
Boys, your supper will be ready in a minute. Your mother has been out in the wet all the way to the cook shop to buy it. It was very good of her to do so, eh?
Oh, how could I go and behave? I'm sure my love coming home, I had no more idea than the baby. Johnny, don't look at me, but at her, or she'll fall out of your lap and be killed, and then you'll die in agonies of a broken heart and serve you right. I'd no more idea being cross than that little darling. But somehow, ever since that man looked at me...
My dear, whatever do you mean?
There was this odd-looking man in the street, a stranger, and dressed all in black. Ever since I've seen him, I've felt very strange. Oh, I don't know. I must be tired.
I understand. My little woman was put out. Hard times and hard weather and hard work make life trying now and then.
Yes. I'm quite better now. Oh, what a wicked fool I was. Do you know, Dolphus, my dear, when I was single, I might have given myself away in several directions. Why, at one time, there were four after me.
Yes, my love.
Well, I'm sure I never think of such things now. And I'm sure I've got as good a husband as any in the world. But you see, well, I did get a little out of sorts in the street just now. There were such delightful things to buy, such delicious things to eat, and there was so much calculating to be done before I durst lay out a sixpence. You hate me, Dolphus, don't you?
Not quite, as yet.
Well, I'll tell you the whole truth, and then perhaps you will. It was after I saw that man, and I was trudging home in the cold when I began to wonder whether I mightn't have done better and been happier if...
If you had married somebody else?
Yes, that's what I really thought. Do you hate me now, Dolphus?
Why, no. Not as yet.
Oh, I don't know whether I was ill or mad or what, but suddenly I couldn't recall anything that ought to bind us together. All the pleasures we've ever had seemed so cheap and insignificant that I hated them. I could think of nothing except our being poor and the number of mouths we have to feed.
Well, my dear, that's truth after all.
Oh, but since I've been at home a little while, I felt as if a rush of recollection has come over me that softened my heart. All our cares and wants since we've been married seem to speak to me and say they'd made us one.
Mm.
And that I never could have been, or would have been, any other than the wife and mother I am. Oh, how could I have ever behaved so? Oh, look! That man in the shop! What does he want?
Whatever's the matter? How you shake?
He's the one I saw in the street just now. I'm afraid of him.
Afraid of him? Why?
I can't remember. Oh, what is it that's going from me again? What is it?
What may be your pleasure, sir, with us?
I fear that my coming in unnoticed has alarmed you. But you were talking and did not hear me.
My little woman there says it's not the first time you've alarmed her tonight.
I am sorry, I had no intention of frightening her. My name is Redlaw, and I lecture at a college nearby. A young gentleman who is a student there lodges in your house, I believe.
Mr. Denham's room is upstairs, sir, if you wish to see him. I'll light your way, if you'll follow me up this little staircase.
No, I'd rather go alone. He does not expect me. Please, give me the candle, and I'll find my own way.
Very well, sir.
Come! Here!
There's another one!
No, get no,
there!
The place is small enough without you!
What has upset them? What have I done?
Redlaw was beginning to understand enough of what he was and what he made of others to fear contact with his fellow man.
Is that you, Millie?
Mr. Redlaw. Don't get up from your couch.
I will sit here by the door. I heard by accident that one of my class was ill and alone. As luck would have it, I have found him.
An attack of fever has weakened me, sir. But I'm greatly better. I cannot say I have been alone in my illness, or I should be forgetting my kind nurse.
You are speaking of Millie, the caretaker's wife.
Yes, sir.
I remember your name, and now I recollect your face, though we have had very little personal communication together.
Very little.
Why have you tried to keep your situation from me?
Mr. Redlaw, I fear you have discovered my secret. But think how innocent I am, except in name and descent, of any wrong inflicted on you.
Wrong?
For heaven's sake, sir, let me return to my old, reserved, and distant place among your students. Know me only as Denham, the name I have assumed, and not by that of Longford.
Longford?
My mother's name, sir. The name she took when she might perhaps have taken one more honored. My parents' marriage was not a happy one, and from my infancy my mother has spoken of you with honor and respect. It may be presumptuous of me to mention the subject, but since you once felt no common interest in my mother, it may mean something to hear with what affection I have regarded you, and how reluctantly I have kept aloof from your encouragement.
Remain where you are. Don't come nearer to me. What have I to do with your distempered dreams? If you want money, here it is. I came to offer it, and for no other reason.
Take back your purse, sir. I wish you could take the memory of your words from me, too.
You do?
I do.
I can see very well now, thank you,
doll. Millie, I'm afraid to meet her. There's a quality of goodness in her that I fear I might influence. Hide me.
There is an inner room in there, sir. Come in.
Dear Mr. Edmund, they told me you had a visitor.
As you see, Millie, there is no one else here.
Then I'll sit with you a while. Your pillows are not comfortable. I will soon put them right.
Please leave them alone. You make such a fuss over everything.
I'm sure health will seem more precious to you after this illness than it has ever been, Mr. Edmund. I've seen you so touched by the kindness of the poor people downstairs. You must have thought that without some trouble and sorrow, we should never know half the good there is around us.
The people downstairs will be paid for any little extra service they may have rendered me. Mm-hmm. I can't be made to feel more obliged to them by your exaggerating the case, Millie. I am much obliged to you, too. What more do you want? I have had an indisposition which your solicitude makes a great deal more of than it merits, and now it's over.
Would you rather be alone, Mr. Edmund? You don't seem yourself at the moment.
There is no reason to detain you.
If you should need me, I will come back willingly. But you mustn't be afraid that I shall be troublesome to you. You owe me nothing. Good night, Mr. Edmund.
What I have overheard sickens me. Oh,
what have you done? What change have you wrought in me? Give me back myself.
Give me back myself. I am infected. I am infectious. Where I felt interest, compassion, sympathy, I'm turning into stone. Selfishness and ingratitude spring up in my footsteps. But I am not sunk so low that I cannot hate the wretches I transform.
As Redlaw spoke, the young man caught at his cloak, but he threw him off and struck him before rushing wildly into the cold night air, where the phantom's words loomed in the darkness. The gift that I have given, you shall give again. Go where you will. As he was going along, Redlaw recollected that of those with whom he had communicated since the phantom's disappearance, only the boy who had rushed into his room had shown no sign of being changed. He determined to seek out the wild thing, to prove if this was so, and hurriedly directed his steps back to the keeper's lodge.
Get up, boy! You have not forgotten me.
You let me alone! This is the woman's house, not yours.
Where is the woman's husband and the old man?
Out! Something's the matter. They were sent for in a hurry and told them to stop here.
Come with me, and I'll give you more shillings than you ever saw. Do you know the way back to where you came from?
I'm not going to take you there. Let me fail. Heat some live coals at you.
Listen, boy. You may take me where you please, but take me where the people are very miserable or very wicked. I want to do them good by making them forget. Not harm them.
Give me some money first. Oh.
There. Now come.
Redlaw followed the savage creature, who led the way, shifting his money from his hand into his mouth and back again, and stealthily rubbing it bright upon his shreds of clothes. Redlaw stopped briefly to listen to a plaintive strain of music he thought he heard, and glanced down at the child. He shuddered as he saw with horror that the expression on the boy's face was the same as his own, without humanity or pity. They journeyed on for some time until they arrived at a ruinous collection of houses. The boy touched Redlaw's arm and stopped. He pointed to one house where there were lights in the windows and a dim lantern in the doorway with "Lodgings for Travellers" painted on it.
In now! I'll wait outside!
Will they let me in?
Say you're a doctor. There's plenty ill here.
Redlaw saw him trail himself upon the dust and crawl within the shelter of an arch as if he were a rat. He had no pity for the thing, but feared it. And when it looked at him with that frightful likeness of expression on its face, Redlaw hurried into the house as a retreat. He pushed open the yielding door and placed his hand upon the broken stair rail. He passed a man who drew back with much emotion in his manner and, as if by a sudden impulse, mentioned Redlaw's name aloud. Redlaw had no time to consider, however, for to his greater amazement, he was greeted by old Philip Switcher.
Mr. Redlaw, how like you, sir. You've come after us to render any help you can, but you're too late. Come in, sir. Yes, my son William, too.
Who is the man on the bed?
My eldest son, George. It was more his mother's pride than all the rest.
As I entered the house, I saw a man who seemed to know me. Who was he?
A gambler and a ne'er-do-well, I'm afraid, sir. Having been wayfaring towards London with my unhappy brother, he'd come to fetch us.
Father? My boy. You spoke just now of my having been my mother's favourite. It's dreadful to think now of what happened long ago.
No, it does me good, George. Your mother loved you dearly, and with her last breath said, "Tell him I forgave him, blessed him, and prayed for him." Those were her words to me, and I've never forgotten them, though I may be seven.
Do I see a man in a black cloak over there?
Why, yes, George, it's Mr. Redlaw.
Oh, ask him to come here. My time is very short, but what I can do right, I'll try to do. Mr. Redlaw, there was another man here just now.
I saw him downstairs.
Well, he's penniless and destitute. Look after him. Lose no time. I know he has it in mind to kill himself. Don't you know him? Don't you remember?
No, I...
Then, damn you!
To the devil with you!
William, come away from here. We'll go home.
Are you going to leave your son?
That's no son of mine. No such threat as that has any claim on me. My children are pleasant to look at, and they're useful and wait upon me. I've a right to it, I may be certain.
You're old enough to get no older. I don't know what good you are. We could have a deal more pleasure without you.
The cold eye with which William now regarded his father impressed itself no more on Redlaw's observation. He broke his way from the spot to which he seemed to have been fixed and ran out of the house. His guide came crawling forth from his refuge and readily obeyed his instructions to take them back to the college. The chemist made no pause until they reached his chamber, where the boy withdrew behind the table and watched him as he made the door fast. The stillness of the room was broken at last by a knock at the door.
It's me, sir. Please let me in.
What is the matter?
My father's gone at once, and his father has turned childish in a moment. William himself is changed. Oh, Mr. Redlaw, help me.
I am the last one who can help.
Let me out! I want to go back to the woman!
Shadow of myself, come back and haunt me day and night.
Let me out!
And do what I have done and restore those whom I have cursed.
Let go! He will kill himself! He was so brave! Let me in!
A ghostly silence succeeded to the knocking. In time, the boy fell asleep. And in his chair the chemist sat, like a man turned to stone. He raised his head and saw the phantom standing looking at him. It was not alone, but was that really Millie beside it, smiling down on the sleeping child?
Do not bring her here!
This is merely a shadow. When morning comes, seek out the reality whose image I present before you.
To destroy her peace and make her what I am myself.
I have said, seek her out. Nothing more.
Can she set right the wrongs I have done?
Seek her out.
I will obey you. But there is one thing I would ask. Why has this child been proof against my influence?
This wretched creature has been abandoned since birth to a worse condition than the beasts, and has received no humanizing touch to make a softening memory of sorrow or wrong spring up in its hardened heart. Woe tenfold to the nation that counts its monsters such as this by hundreds and thousands. He is the perfect example of what you chose to become, and you can banish nothing from his memory. He is the symbol of man's indifference, you of man's presumption.
Redlaw stooped beside the boy, and with the compassion he now felt for both of them, covered him up as he slept. Soon the sun rose, red and glorious, turning the smoke and vapor of the city to a cloud of gold. The Tetterbys were up and doing, though their tempers were sadly changed. The hand of every little Tetterby was against the other little Tetterbys, and even Johnny's hand rose against the baby.
You brute! You murdering little boy!
Why don't our teeth come through then? Instead of bothering me, how would you like it? If you was me, you'd go for a soldier. I will too. There ain't no babies in the army.
I wish I was in the army myself. I'm a slave here. I never have holiday from one year's end to another year's end. Why don't you do anything, Dolphus? You'd better read the paper than do nothing at all.
What's there to read in a paper?
Police? Suicides?
No business of mine.
Births, marriages and deaths? Are those nothing to you?
I don't see why births or deaths should interest me till it's my turn. As to marriage, I've done it myself. I know quite enough about him.
How old and shabby he looks. I never saw such a change in a man. Oh, dear me, it was a sacrifice.
If you mean your marriage, my good woman, I was the sacrifice, and I wish the sacrifice hadn't been accepted.
You can't wish it more than I do, Tetterby.
I don't know what I ever saw in her. She's fat, she's aging, she don't compare with other women.
He's common looking, he's small, he's beginning to stoop, and he's going bald.
I must have been half out of my mind when I did it.
My senses must have forsook me.
I can see Mrs. William coming down the street.
Why? Oh, Lord, forgive me. What evil tempers have I been given way to?
How could I have ever treated him badly again after all I said last night?
Sophia, my little woman, I shall never forgive myself.
So it was me. Me.
No. I wondered how I'd ever admired you and thought you didn't look, well, as slim as I could wish.
And I thought you were small. And so you are.
Yeah.
And I'll make much of you because of it.
Oh, Mary, this is Mrs. William.
You're all so glad to see me too this bright Christmas morning.
We are.
Mr. Redlaw came to see me at sunrise and implored me to go with him to the house where William's brother is lying ill. When we went into the room, the sick man sat up in his bed and, bursting into tears, stretched out his arms to me and entreated me to ask his poor old father for his pardon and his blessing. He held my hand until he sank into a doze. All this has made me very happy.
Dear, kind nurse, forgive me. I heard the children calling out your name, and suddenly I was myself again. Oh, dear Millie, don't weep. Don't reproach me so.
It's not that. No, it's joy. Oh, dear. Now, there is news from home, Mr. Edmund. Your not writing when you were very ill created some suspicion of the truth. Your fiancée was unable to rest without satisfying her doubts and came up to town last night. She came directly to the college and I spoke to her before sunrise.
Where is she now?
Why? She is in my little parlour at the lodge, waiting to see you. Now hurry!
When Millie arrived back at the lodge, Mr. Redlaw was already there. Old Philip was sitting sullenly in his chair, coldly watched by William. But as Millie came in, and father and son both turned to look at her, a radiant change came upon their faces, and they threw wide their arms to embrace her.
Why, where has my quiet mouse been all this time? What, I fancy I've been dreaming.
Well, that's what I say myself, Father. I've been in an ugly sort of dream, I think. How are you, Father?
Well, you're strong and brave, my boy. Begging your pardon, Mr. Redlaw, but seeing you here on a Christmas morning reminds me of when you were a student. Yes, I recollect you came here one Christmas morning with a young lady. Asking your pardon, but I think it was a sister you was very much attached to.
I had a sister.
Well, it began to snow, and my wife invited your sister to sit by the fire burning in the great dinner hall. As I was stirring up the blaze for her to warm her feet by, she read the scroll out loud that's underneath the picture, "Lord, keep my memory green." If I should die, she said, may the Lord keep my brother's memory of me green, and not let me be forgotten.
You speak to me of what I cannot follow. My memory is gone, and I have lost all that man would remember.
Mr. Redlaw, can you remember what I said about someone who was your friend and stood on the verge of destruction?
Yes, I remember that.
Well, he is the father of Mr. Edmund, the student who has been ill. His real name is Longford.
I recollect the name. Did he ever wrong me?
Yes.
Oh, then it's hopeless. Hopeless.
I went back to the house last night alone and, thank God, managed to trace him. I was not a moment too soon. He's waiting outside, sir. Let me bring him in.
Very well.
Come in, sir. See how low he's sunk, how lost he is. Do you not think it would move your pity if you could remember all that was connected with him long ago? Hmm? seems to me to be a good thing we remember wrong that has been done us, that we may forgive it.
Indeed. Pardon me, great heaven, for throwing away mine own high attribute.
Perhaps you now see Mr. Longford in a clearer light.
I do.
He cannot go home. He knows that he could only carry shame and trouble to those he had so cruelly neglected. A little money would enable him to live and try to atone for the wrong he's done his unfortunate wife and son.
It shall be done. Tell him that I would forgive him if I were so happy as to know how he wronged me.
Come closer, Mr. Longford.
You are so generous, Redlaw, that you will try to banish your feeling that the force of retribution has been at work when you look at this decayed wretch standing before you. But I do not try to banish it from myself. I took my first downward step the day I dealt falsely by you and took your loved one from you. I might have been a different man if I had avoided that first fatal step. Your sister is at rest and better off than she could have been with me, even if I were the man you once thought me. Without this kind lady's help, I should have made my own grave last night, and I have dared to come here at her suggestion to take your bounty and to thank you for it. I hope my son may deserve your interest for his mother's sake.
As he went out, he raised his eyes to Redlaw, who looked him in the face and held out his hand. Longford, returning, touched it with both his own and slowly left the room. The chemist dropped into a chair, his face in his hands, as Millie knelt down to put some warm clothing on the boy.
You know, sir, there's a motherly feeling in Mrs. Williams' breast that must and will out. I wish we had one of our own to love and cherish. She built such hopes on our little dead baby.
Oh, I am not unhappy, though I think of it every day. It is a comfort to me. It speaks to me in many ways. It has given me greater sympathy for others' disappointed hopes. When I see a beautiful child, I love it all the better. Thinking, my child might have been like that. And I am proud and happy.
Millie, you are the spirit of goodness and affection. And by your teaching an example of pure, unselfish love, I feel my memory is being restored to me. And I thank God for it.
So Redlaw folded Millie to his heart as the student entered, leading by the hand a lovely young girl. And he embraced them too, and entreated them to be his children. Then he laid his hand upon the child, and vowed to protect and teach him. Then he shook old Philip's hand, and said that they would hold a Christmas dinner in the great dinner hall. And it was done. Gazing from the darkness of the panelled wall like life, the sedate face in the portrait with the beard and ruff looked down at them all from under its verdant wreath of holly, and clear and plain below, as if a voice had uttered them, were the words, "Lord, keep my memory green."
In The Haunted Man and the Ghost's Bargain by Charles Dickens, dramatized for radio by Jill Brook, Charles Dickens was played by John Moffat, Redlaw, Michael Tudor Barnes, and Millie Swidger, Dennis Lay. William Swidger, Ronald Herdman. Philip Swidger, Godfrey Kenton. George Swidger, Timothy Carlton. Adolphus Tetterby, Timothy Bateson. Sophia Tetterby, Maxine Audley. Johnny Tetterby, Stuart Heath. Adolphus Tetterby Jr., Winston Ead. The Boy, Ricky Belsham. And Denham, Andrew Winkert. The play was produced by Glyn Dearman and directed by Kay Patrick.